Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, welcome to Film Fandango, the film podcast. I'm David Reed, and this is Merrick Larwood.
Hello, film lovers. We've run out, we're on about episode 160-something now.
Yeah.
I think every introduction must be exactly the same.
Almost identical, yeah. With this immediate deconstruction of our form before the form has really taken off.
Yeah. Welcome to the film podcast, and we chat general nonsense about films. But thank God it's not just us this week.
We've got a guest this week. It's Mr. Brett Goldstein. Hello.
Hello.
How are you doing, Brett? Friend of the show.
All right. Lovely to be here on the show.
Lovely to have you here.
And our fans, as Brett pointed out, will know that recognise Brett's voice from episode, what number was it?
54.
That great episode, 54.
54.
Do you remember 54?
We won't see their days again.
That was when we were with Absolute Radio. Yeah.
We were. You brought in The Hunchback of Notre Dame.
Disney's The Hunchback of Notre Dame.
Still your favourite film of all time?
Top ten.
I tell you what, speaking of Disney, very briefly, I still haven't seen Beauty and the Beast, which people tell me possibly the best.
That's
one
with the candles, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, that's
it?
The best one.
The one with the candles, yeah, the candle one. Yeah. Yeah,
always remember Disney films by the
mascot.
Yeah.
Yeah. So well, Aladdin is the carpet. Yeah, the rug. Magic rug.
Yeah.
Yeah, fair enough.
I bumped into you a couple of times at the cinema. You're a big cinema fan, are you?
Yeah.
What are your favourite cinemas?
Do you know what? I don't know, but I love the IMAX. I think the IMAX is the best place to see a film because the audience behave themselves to a massive screen and massive sound. That's my perfect viewing place.
Those are the three things you want, isn't
yeah.
it?
And they pay so much money.
The floor's
no
not
one
sticky.
Talks, no one talks at IMAX. I don't know why that is. I think
it's because they have that announcement at the beginning yeah. with somebody in a spotlight, so it feels like there's sort of an yeah. authority figure in the room.
I'll see pretty much anything if you put it on the IMAX. I'll even watch a boring one. If you say, oh, it's on the IMAX, I'll go, all right.
I've got a correction to make as well. I'm actually a correction.
Oh, yeah?
You know, I was banging on about how good Prometheus was. That was the first film I saw at the IMAX.
Right.
And I saw it on my computer.
It's not a good film.
It doesn't stand up on my computer screen the way it did at the IMAX.
So basically you were reviewing the IMAX experience. Yeah.
I didn't realise it.
Great
scene. I was just looking at, I was even excited when the Dolby Surround sound logo came up.
Mm. Yeah.
Whoa! Yeah.
That is often the best bit if you go to a kids' animation or something. I wonder if it's something primal, you know, like what cathedrals were for back yeah. in medieval times. You're just dwarfed by it, so you behave.
Have you been to the Empire Cinema? They've got a new screen called Impact. Have you been to that?
What?
No, I've not. Yeah.
It's called it. I went to see Nightcrawler at the it, and I said, "What's the Impact?" And they said, "It's our biggest screen." And I said, "I like a big screen." Turns out the reason it's called Impact is because it's a fucking massive screen, like as big as an IMAX, but there's only three rows. And so you're sat like fucking so close to this thing. It is like you're being knocked. It was awful.
Oh, really?
You can't. It's so big and you're so close to it that you can't see the edges of it. It's beyond your peripheral vision.
Is it for visually impaired people then, maybe?
I think it's because they had a little bit of room left and they thought we could cram in this corridor. We could whack a screen up and put some chairs, line some chairs in front of it.
Wow.
And charge you a lot of money. It's mental. It's so. And they call it Impact because it's.
You don't want to, I mean,
that's too
I might be wrong, but most of these films haven't been shot with the idea of viewing them along a surface.
You know? Yeah, it's too.
What is your seat choice? I have to sit at the back.
Middle back.
I don't, you're not even in the middle. I sit close to an aisle because of my...
Oh, with the IMAX? Or
my, no, just general cinema. Because no,
fairly close to the front. Well, not really? Front, but like four rows back.
Oh, you love Impact then. You've got to go there. Yeah. You love it.
I can't stand people sitting behind me.
I try to
minimise the... if I sit at the back and I'm by myself, I hope my idea is that people think, oh, that bloke may be masturbating.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to sit anywhere near him.
Yeah.
And that guarantees me the space. But since I've been going in the afternoons, I'm pretty much all right.
Hang on, were you raised in a prison?
No. Right. Why?
I'm the same. I don't like having people behind me.
I do that on buses as well. I just sit at the back. It's a bit like the Bourne Identity, where I try and look at all the escape routes. I want to know what people are going, what's going on.
Well, there's that Roger Moore Bond film, isn't there, where they try and place him at a cabaret seat near the stage, and he says, I don't like having people.
Oh, was that the Spy Love Me that was on?
Oh, no, hang on, it's the opposite, isn't it? He says he had a turn with a wall once, and so he wants to sit down the front, and then the whole seat just disappears into the floor instead. Ah, oh, they called his bluff.
Oh, that Live and Let Die?
Yeah, probably. It sounds like something they do on Live and Let Die.
So let's talk about... should we have a look at general chat about the ones you've... I think this is a great... We're in the middle of, I think, since we've been doing this podcast...
Yeah.
The best glut of good films in about 3 or 4 years, I think.
It's a rich seam of films, isn't it, at the moment?
It's been a good week.
Yeah. And you've been to see about 7 films in 7 days.
Yes. Right? I had a little mission because I was behind, so I thought I've got to see everything, and I've done one a day, although I missed a day, so I did 2 yesterday.
What was the double bill yesterday?
I did Enemy.
Yeah.
And then I did Kingsman.
Ah, we've not talked about Kingsman, we've talked about Enemy.
Loved Enemy.
Did you?
Yeah. What was it about? Loved it.
I saw Enemy. Yeah. I thought it was all right.
I was like, ugh.
You slagged it off, didn't you?
Slightly. No, I thought it wasn't as clever as it thought it was. But
I don't know what it thought it was. But it was good
and
fun.
Kingsman, from the trailers, it looks awful, but it's been getting some good reviews.
The thing about Kingsman is, it's very interesting, right? Because, basically, I thought it was great. It's however long it is, an hour and 40 minutes, and for an hour and 39 minutes, I thought, this is excellent. It's really well made, it's really fun, it's really stylish, really... good, sort of anarchic, it's great. And then there is a joke, which is the very last line of the film, that is so wildly offensive that it ruined the entire film for me.
Wow.
The joke, there is like, it's like a fucking one liner, and literally I went, that is outrageous. And the film ended, and I was like, well, you've undermined your entire film with one line.
Always leave them shouting hate crime. That's the rule, isn't it?
It's such a so naughty and like, ugh. You just go, man, you've just blown your whole...
I feel a bit annoyed now because it means that I'm going to have to watch the whole of that film.
Yeah, I'm really sold it though.
This is some very clever marketing ploy to get everyone to watch it.
On the joke right at the end. Yeah. You will not believe what happens at the 135th minute.
It's like they brought Dapper Laughs in for a script pass at the end. Oh, like, okay. How should we end this? And he went, it may as well have ended with, oi, oi. It's so bad.
Oh, no.
So naughty.
And what have you enjoyed that you've seen of... all the Oscar contenders and all that business.
Loved Whiplash. I mean,
yeah, brilliant.
Loved Inherent Vice. Is Inherent Vice that
nominated?
No. It's not nominated. Well, it's because it's from this year, isn't it?
Oh, okay.
Just, I think.
I've liked everything, but the best one, the one that was perfect, was Ex Machina. I don't know how you say it.
Is it Ex Machina?
Yeah, Ex Machina. It's from the Latin Deus Ex Machina. God from the Machine.
Oh,
which
okay.
It has come to mean, it's from actually when the God Machine would be in theatres where they'd crank a guy playing God down onto the stage to solve everyone's problems at the end. So they'd just get, everything would get tangled up and then God would come down and solve it. And so it's now used as to refer to that lazy device of things are just solved by a factor that wasn't present previously. Deus Ex Machina is when Doctor Who just points his sonic screwdriver and it's got a brand new ability you didn't think it had before, and it just solves it.
I've heard of it from script things. So basically, all the superhero films have always got that when it's like, oh, we need to go and press the green button to reverse everything.
Famously, in Superman, flying around the world to reverse time is sort of Deus Ex Machina because there is no mention of him having that ability before. So that's where it's from. So Ex Machina just means, you know,
Well, it's a good job you enjoyed that, because that's what we've all seen it, and we're going to talk about it today. Does anyone do a bit of a synopsis about?
Sure. Do you want to? Who? Yeah.
You
all
can,
right.
You could just share it.
All right. So, Ex Machina is the story about Domhnall Gleeson winning a competition to go meet.
It sounds like Only Fools and Horses, yeah, a holiday episode, doesn't it? He's done a curling competition. He's won a holiday in the Algarve.
He wins a competition to meet his boss in this enormous computer company called
Blue Book,
which is basically Super Google, right? His boss is this recluse who lives on Jurassic Park, only without dinosaurs.
He does live on Jurassic Park.
Pretty much felt like it. It turns out there's an ulterior motive to him winning this competition, which is that this boss has developed an artificial intelligence sexy robot lady that he wants Domhnall Gleeson as a programmer to test. To test whether or not he has achieved a true artificial intelligence. That's about right, right?
Yeah, that's exactly
that's
right.
It. So there's the three of them in it, which is the boss, the sexy robot lady.
So sexy.
And Domhnall Gleeson.
So Oscar Isaac, who plays
Davis.
He's in quite a lot of things. He's sort of really broken through. Mm. And it's written and directed by Alex Garland.
It's his debut, which is fascinating, because he's got such a CV as a writer. Am I getting things confused? But he wrote The Book of the Beach.
Yeah.
He wrote 28 Days Later.
Yeah.
He wrote Marley and Me, or am I thinking of someone else?
No, I'm sure you're
I'm thinking of someone else we were talking about last week. What else did he write?
I read quite a lot of his books. Tesseract, that's the one. Film as well. Dread,
yes. And that's what I was thinking of when I said Marley
as well.
And this is his debut. So, kudos. But what did we think?
I thought it was perfect. I thought it was a genuinely perfect film. I thought it was brilliantly designed, brilliantly written, brilliantly acted, brilliantly shot, and it was just so clever and also a perfect bit of science fiction, because it gave you an idea of something and it made you think about it in lots of different ways, and it ended in a way that was completely satisfying and yet also gave you lots of questions to think about. I just fucking loved it. I thought it was amazing. And I was in love with the sexy robot lady.
Alice Vikander.
Vikander.
I thought it was brilliant as well. Mm. I've sort of seen Domhnall Gleeson in About Time, which I hated. And a few things playing sort of geeky.
I was wondering if that was going to taint you, because the last thing I saw him in was Frank, which was brilliant.
Loved, yeah.
And I so I have plenty of time for him.
I didn't have that much time for him. And I thought, oh no, he's just going to be doing this sort of rom-commy thing.
I just wouldn't want to piss off his dad, because his dad is
I can't
awesome.
Believe that's his dad for a start. Brendan Gleeson, they came from the same body. This huge, big...
Not the same body.
Not the same body. They came from the same gene pool, I meant.
Yeah.
Not the same body. I mean, he's not...
Domhnall Gleeson is 50% Brendan Gleeson. That's a fact.
Yeah.
So...
His mum must have been so skinny... So geeky and really waif-like to produce that.
Who are you picturing then? Like Janine from Ghostbusters.
Just a pencil. Just a red pencil.
Brendan Gleeson screwed a pencil. Pencil with a womb.
Yeah.
Okay.
I was really impressed. They did some really clever things in this. It's classy and it makes you ask a lot of big questions about humanity in a non-patronising way. I thought the decision to make Oscar Isaac the genius an unlikable character.
He was a total douche from like scene one, wasn't he?
It was a great decision because
utterly
it makes
unlikable.
You sort of on the side of the robots.
But yeah. I like the genius scientist jock, which is basically what he was, because no one does that. They always do, well, he's a nerd.
Completely new character.
Pretty much, and he brilliantly played. Like the threat in the guy throughout, because you felt he could turn at any moment, like proper sociopathy without being like comic book, you know. He could have been a nice guy as well, but you were never certain, and that's what was creepy about
it. And by doing that, they make you as the viewer almost really sympathetic and empathetic with Domhnall Gleeson's character. Yeah. So you're almost going through the same process of, which is a Turing test, basically.
Well, it isn't. I had only two issues with it. I loved it. I thought it was great. I thought it was a great film. I've seen films about AI before, and this didn't do anything new from others. It probably did them better. It probably did all of this better. But there was a film that came out last year or the year before called The Machine, which was like a B-movie version of this, where a artificial intelligence sexy robot woman played by an incredibly attractive Australian ballet dancer in that one. And they're testing whether or not she has a soul and all of this, and then he ends up falling in love with her and helps her escape and all that. Like, it's a very similar film. But that one was almost made for TV and just a bit daft. Like, there were too many elements and stuff, whereas this one really pared it down. It was almost like a play, this one, wasn't it? But the Turing test was nowhere near this film, actually. They talked about it because they had to and then did nothing to do with the Turing test.
Or what is a Turing test? It's just if someone's...
A human being has to interview a computer from behind a screen. They're not allowed to see them, and so they cannot know if the responses are coming from a human or a computer, and they have to then see if the computer can trick them into thinking it's definitely human,
like the Blade Runner thing at the start.
Blade Runner did this. It played on that idea. Where they would do that was more fantasy with eye dilation and stuff.
I thought it was about consciousness, that you have to say yes, that has a consciousness.
Artificial intelligence is the term they use, but Ex Machina went into concepts of consciousness as well. It sort of went a bit broader with it, the idea of, you know, love and attraction and survival and all of these things as being, you know, shown to. But they sort of dipped in and out of scientific concepts, you know, a bit like a sort of sushi of just a bit of Turing test, and then we'll move on to that because I don't know what to do with that, because we want to see the robot because the CGI is incredible. Amazing. This is where I love CGI heavy films, when like it isn't the star, it's just making something you've never seen before. Like, you could, there was no seams in any of it, was it?
No.
Amazing.
What's your second thought with it?
I wanted a bit more directorial flair. I felt towards the end, it felt like it had gotten so close to being like a Kubrick film, but I actually felt it lost tension in its final act for some reason. I think it's largely because they were just... I don't know, there was something up with it towards the end for me.
There's a great twist at the end as well, which is brilliant. But here's another point I think might be for the female viewers, whether they found it... It is a bit sort of like men looking on the female.
It's exclusively male gaze, but for a reason, I think.
Yeah, that's what... I think it's feminist. I think it's because it's all about... I can't spoil it, but, like, it's deliberately... She deliberately looks... He's made her to look a way that a man will feel, and she talks very softly.
Yeah.
And
I'd say it's probably more about the history of gender relations than actually about AI at all. Yeah. You know, I think that...
There's so many different... you feel as if you want to watch it again and write down... You could, if you're a film studies person, that's a film you can enjoy and write loads of essays.
yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
That's going to be in lots of syllabuses to come. But what an impressive... I was worried when they went to the... because basically the start, he wins a competition, they go to...
Jurassic Park.
Yeah, the complex. And I thought... I just looked at the budget, it was 11 million. Whether that was a budgetary thing. So when I watch films now, as we're going to talk about... a film later on, but we'll talk about whether they had to set it by setting it in one place. They could do all that stuff and not have the huge budgets of, you know, crowd scenes.
Well, because they had a lot of effects shots to do, didn't they? So, yeah. But it's basically set in a featureless shoebox.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's very clever.
And then there's a brilliant dancing.
So good. The dancing's brilliant.
It is excellent.
I was pleasantly surprised by this, and I was surprised there hadn't been that much hype about it, that it hadn't been praised as I think because it's come out really close to the Oscar season, maybe that's why.
They
dominate everything, and this is one a real great directorial debut.
Yeah,
well, I'm sure this will do him fantastic business in terms of getting him more work.
Well, he writes stuff as well. He can just write and direct his own films. What more do you want?
He's an auteur.
I need to get in with him.
I
need to meet Alex Garland.
Where's he from?
Where is he?
Is he English?
Where's he hiding?
Alex Garland hang out?
Jurassic Park.
Have we all seen the trailer for Jurassic World, the one that came out with the Super Bowl? That looks... I'm not keen.
I'm worried.
I'm worried too.
What happens in the trailer?
Chris Pratt basically leads his motorcycle gang of trained raptors against the genetically modified big dinosaur.
Oh, he's got a gang of dinosaurs.
Seemingly. That's what they're implying, also, isn't it?
It's like 101 Dalmatians, but with dinosaurs.
Or the Flintstones or something.
I don't like the idea of making a super dinosaur because it's enough.
Yeah.
Dinosaur is enough. T-Rex is enough. I don't need to see a super T-Rex.
No.
Oh, it's a super T-Rex?
Yeah, it's called like a D-Rex or something.
It's like when theme parks have to carry on expanding and making up new...
Yeah.
Or when they have Scooby-Doo, it's like the all-new Scooby-Doo, then that's going to get old. And what did you do when you make the next series of Scooby-Doo? Yeah.
Put a little one in it.
Yeah, then you've got the all-super, all-new, extra-new one.
And it's never better, is it?
Oh, yeah. It's worse.
It's always worse.
So Ex Machina, sum up then. It's really difficult to say it's difficult to talk about a really great film, isn't it?
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah. It's just really, really smart and well put through. And you don't see a lot of films that are sort of like adult like that, where it's not adult as in it's nothing boring, it's not boring. It's just sort of intelligent and well thought out and entertaining and brilliant.
Do you know what I mean by the Kubricky feel of
it?
Just like the sort of hotel corridors and the claustrophobia. It's probably The Shining it's reminding me of.
I don't think it didn't have the same symmetry that Kubrick's
single point shot that I watched a video about how he uses this same shot in most of his films and there's a montage of it and it's just awesome.
And everything the whole set's all
exactly symmetrical.
But I do think there was when you're at the cinema and you're halfway through a film and you're convinced you're in totally safe hands because the writing's so good and everything's so good I can relax now, this is going to be great. That's how I felt. Well done, but I give it a high in terms of merit, a 9 or an 8 or 9, I don't know.
Go on, how many?
A high 8, I don't know.
High 8 merit.
I've been so
a spoiled. Bloated 8.
I've been so spoiled with I love Birdman, I love Whiplash.
There you go. If this had come out at the same time as all of the crap blockbusters, you'd have given it a 10.
My system's gone. My system's been ruined. It's been spoiled.
It's terrible.
This is how people become, how rich people become, like gluttons and stuff like that. And this is how you get your pivot. You get used to such spoiled. I'm spoiled.
You're spoiled is the word. How many Bretts do you give it out of 10?
I give it 10 Bretts.
10.
If Brett is a good thing, I give it 10 Bretts.
Yeah, okay. I think 8 Davids.
Well, pretty high praise indeed for Ex Machina.
Go see it, people. We're going to play a game now. As we have a guest, we'll take the opportunity to play the casting game. Brett will be our judge. Marek and I have been tasked with recasting, sacrilegious as this game often is, Raiders of the Lost Ark. This is because it was rumoured recently that Chris Pratt of Parks and Recreation's Guardians of the Galaxy and Jurassic World fame is being lined up to be the new Indiana Jones. So we are going to not cast Chris Pratt and cast other people in the roles of Indy, Marion and Belloc, or Belosh. So, Marek.
Who do you want us to cast first, Brett?
Let's go back. Belloc.
Belosh. Okay, Marek,
where are you supposed to be from?
I don't know where Belloc's from.
He's Belgian.
Is he? Belgian Jewish.
Okay. Well, I have gone... I'm going for villain. I'm going for European villain.
Yeah. With a bit of sort of... What's he like? He's sort of... a bit smarmy, smug. But he's not rugged like Indy. He's sort of the antithesis, isn't he? Gets other people to do his dirty work.
He's played villains before, so I'm almost about 3 or 4 years too late with this casting. I'm going for Mads Mikkelsen.
Lovely.
Bond villain, also plays a paedophile in something as well.
Many things.
Not a paedophile.
The Hunt.
In The Hunt, yeah. And in He plays Thingy in that series.
He plays Hannibal Lecter in Hannibal.
That's the one.
Yeah.
What does Fandango mean?
It's a dance.
Thank you.
It's a veiled reference to the seminal adventure game Grim Fandango. It's
the way you said it was really defensive, like we're going to do something really bad to you at the end.
Yeah. What's it mean?
Where's this coming?
Where's it going?
Strip me down.
Where's the Fandango bit happen?
Why are we in a wet room? Okay, so you're going with Mads Mikkelsen. I'm going to go for someone I think can bring a bit... an edge of humour to it that I think Mads is too straight for.
Oh, he can do anything.
This guy is sort of all the villains at the moment, but he. When I thought about Belloc, I thought this is the guy. Ralph Fiennes.
Lovely.
Oh, that's a good one.
That's a good one.
So, who are you going to go for?
Do I not get to hear all three?
You have to choose.
I
can mix and match.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry. I'm going to go Ralph Fiennes because of that little bit of, sort of comedy charm.
Yeah, I think it's a good choice as well.
And
thanks, mate.
I don't think you can have a Bond villain who's... I'm sorry.
You're right. Sorry. I made a really big mistake.
It's okay, you still got two to go.
Okay, Marion.
Yeah, who's your Marion?
Marion, it's tricky because I was trying to think of someone who is sort of that tomboyish, drink people under the table, give the hero a run for his money character. And a lot of the current crop, I can't see them quite pulling it off. So I've gone for, rather than my favourite choice I always pick, so I've not gone for her.
Who is that?
Emily Blunt.
Right.
I've gone for someone I think could do it, Marion Cotillard.
Oh, I love her. Oh, I thought I actually looked at her.
Yeah.
For a possibility.
Bet you did.
But the problem is, you need someone who's a bit of tomboyish who can play that.
Yeah.
And I think someone who's got the range.
Diane Keaton.
No, she was in The Muppets and also Amy really Adams. Sexy, yeah, in American Hustle. She can play that boyish girl, Amy Adams. She can look beautiful and she can be fun. And also, if you give me this, it's 1-0.
I don't know. Amy Adams has a little bird quality about her. There's something not swaggery about
her. She can do, but think of her in American Hustle.
I haven't seen it, to
She's
be fair.
She's very sexy in it. I want this game to continue, but... We have a winner.
Yes!
That's a great choice.
I was
going
to go for her.
She's
well.
Also already got her name. It saves us time.
That saves us so much money.
Just googled Marion actresses and then you've got...
But I'll tell you what, Indiana Jones is worth 2 points, whoever you cast for.
You can't change...
No, good call. Good call.
Yeah, because he's the main part. He's got to carry the franchise. We want him to go on to 2 and 3. Okay. So.
And Chris Pratt is out.
Okay, I've gone for someone here.
Yeah.
This person needs to be... literally the most charismatic person. This is like early Indiana Jones.
He's an old school cowboy with a bit more of a sense of humour, I think, you know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I've gone for someone who really good looking, can do sort of comedy and cool. He's not even American, he's not even English, he's European. Nikolai Coster-Waldau.
Oh, really?
Who plays Jaime Lannister in Game of Thrones.
He's in Headhunters as well.
And Headhunter, do you know who he is?
I'm afraid I haven't seen either of those.
Oh, then
things.
I could say anyone.
Oh, shit, man.
Whoopi Goldberg.
That's a really good choice. That's a really
I'm
gonna
go
good choice.
Go with
no. I've
Sorry,
picked...
for a reboot.
I've picked... He's already the head of one franchise, but I saw him in Horrible Bosses 2 and thought he was so much better than I've ever seen him in anything else. I totally think he could do it. Chris Pine.
I can't believe it, because do you know what? If
you know what?
If you knew him...
Merrick.
Yeah?
Merrick is the winner.
Oh.
That is the face of Indiana Jones right there.
He's very charming.
That's a great face.
He's got the... Well, you actually
Chris Pine's
see him
got
in
too
stuff.
Many franchises.
Yeah, he's better than Chris Pratt.
Chris Pine.
Pine. Chris Pine.
I love Chris
He's
Pine.
He's better than Chris Pine as well. He'd be a great Indiana Jones.
You're right. Merrick, you're right. That's a flat out draw.
Well, there we go.
You're just being nice there.
I'm not. I like the look of that guy.
Do you want to do a Salah?
No, I want it to be the...
Dead Heat?
Yeah, Dead
off the
Heat.
Top of our, off the top of our head, Salah, just for the,
who,
for the win.
Who's Salah?
John Rhys Davies. He's the Welsh Arabic man.
But the monkey died. That guy.
The one from
Camels in the compensation for my uncle's car.
Yeah.
That guy. Oh. Come on, no Googling. Come on.
I'm looking up the John Drive from Reece Davies. You can play that part.
Dead Heat, off you go.
It's got to be the...
Arabic Gentleman.
Arabic Welsh.
Oh, who does that?
Big Bear of a Man. I'm going to go for Brendan Gleeson.
Lovely choice.
Who's the one who plays the dwarf in...
That's John Reece Davies.
Oh, right. Can I have him?
Is he still going?
Yeah. He was the tallest man in the Fellowship. There's a fact for you.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Who are you going for?
I've gone for Brendan Gleeson whilst you were stalling.
I'll go for Ben Kingsley.
Oh, no.
Yeah, he can do it. In this sort
really?
Of...
Brendan
Gleeson for the
bullshit.
Win. Well, thank you, Brett. That was very good of you.
Well done, guys.
I will mock up the poster of the winners there.
Well done. That was a great effort.
Well.
Okay. Great game.
Great game. Good game, everyone. Good game.
It's a pleasure to have Brett today because he's done something brilliant. And he has written and made a film called Super Bob, which won the best film at the Loco... Was it called the Loco... The
Loco Film Festival.
Loco Film Festival in London. And I went to see it a week or so ago. It's brilliant, and it's going to come out... When is it coming out?
Well, we're working on that, though. Hopefully in April.
In April. Great. But it's a tremendous achievement, and it's so hard to get even a 5-minute
So this is a feature film.
It's a feature film.
How long have you been working on it?
4.5 years.
4.5 years. That's how long it takes.
You did a short, did you? How did it all start off?
So it started off. We made a short that was 3 minutes long. Me and John. This is all me and John. John, who is the director.
John Drever.
John Drever.
Drever. Yeah.
Who I've known since I was little, and it was his idea. He called me up. He said, "I want to do a." Come round and be a superhero, but it will make a like mockumentary little short. So he interviewed me in his office, and we made this short film. And then we entered the short film in the Virgin Media shorts, and then we got into the final with that, and then that got it some attention. And then people were really nice about the short, people seemed to like it, and then we were like, oh, maybe we should do more with this. And then we went to Film 4, and then they were like, they gave us some money to develop it into a script, and then basically that went on for like 2 years. And I was talking to John last night, all the development money that we were given to write and like go away to cabins and write, all that money went on posh sweets. Realised what have we spent money on this film. All the money went on like dried mango. That was like our treat that we would buy in the shops. We were like, we've got money now, what are we going to spend it on? And we'd spend it on posh sweets.
So when you see on IMDb or Box Office Mojo or whatever that the budget of a film is 200 million or 20 million, how much dried mango do you think that is?
That's a lot of dry mango, isn't it?
But it must be, having written stuff, you know, half an hour things, that's hard enough. And you wrote writing a 90-minute film where you've got, you were each scene's, you know, got to mean something. What was that like?
Well, like, the thing is as well that there was, the concept was so, because the concept is it's a superhero in the real world, and it's one day and it's his day off, and also it's his first date in 6 years, so it's a romantic comedy,
and he's British, isn't he?
So he's British, yeah. and you know, there were lots of, we had to work out so many things like the rules, and we had meetings with the Foreign Office to discuss what would happen in the real world if there was a superhero, and what we found out affected the film, which is that.
And how much of the Foreign Office time did you take up talking to him?
I think we had a good 3 hours
with him. They're clearly very busy,
yeah. And you know, they said, which we use in the film, that if such a thing existed, if a superhero sort of did appear, they would use them as a political pawn. They would say, you know, if Iran called, oh, we've got an earthquake, we need help, they'd say, all right, we'll send our guy, but you've got to do something for us. And it would also be like that. And you know, there were many versions in the early days. We had like a really high action version, and we had a very different types of it, and but then every time we'd keep going back to the short and going, well, what has actually worked about the short? What's nice about the short? And what's nice about the short is it's a man buying milk. He just happens to be a superhero, and it was like, so, and we've got to keep remembering, we're not going to have a lot of money. We can't make a Marvel film. So what's the best version of this film? And the best version was, I hope, this one.
Yeah, I was going to say, it must be really difficult writing a superhero film when you're... Were you constrained by the budget the whole time? What can we actually do? What can we
Well, yeah. I think you have to work to, rather than use, like, I always generally think things like restraints are good, like, make you be more
creative.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, as in, it wasn't like, oh, we want to do this and we can't, because that is like, well, what can we do? We've got to make it. I don't think we made any decisions based on, well, maybe we did. I don't know. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, we realise it can't be an action, it can't be a big action film. So what can it be? And what can be is a romantic comedy and that stuff. But we also kind of worked out, well, we can probably have about 5 minutes worth of special effects stuff. And so we have the sporadic moments of him flying and stuff like that
too. It looks great, yeah. But what have you, because I think a lot of people who listen to the podcast, that some of them are filmmakers themselves.
Yeah.
What would you, and just taking on such a massive project, which have taken a lot of your time.
Yeah.
What have you learned? What would you do differently for the next one? And what are your big lessons that you learned from it?
God, I mean, it's really hard. It's really hard. And now this is the thing. I feel bad that I even said a negative thing about Kingsman, because now, having made a whole film, I sort of think any film is a miracle. And it, like, now, if I see like a terrible film, I go, well, I know you didn't set out to make that terrible.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Stuff happens because it is like building a city. It's so complicated. And you look at the credits of Super Bowl, there's 200 people made that film.
It seems amazing as well to me that the internship, the apprenticeship for making a feature film is to make a 3-minute film.
Yeah,
so you make
a
3-minute and then you're suddenly 90 minute. And that's a hell of a jump, isn't it?
I mean, there's 200... And there's so much luck involved. You can prepare all... Like, and what is also really weird, particularly when you're low budget, I think, because I hear about big budget films and they go, they had a 9-month shoot. We had 3 weeks to make this, which basically means if you have a bad day, you're fucked. That's like 5 minutes of your film that's going to be shit.
Weather done or anything that wouldn't go wrong. Yeah.
You can't afford to go, well, we're going to have to add some extra days to the
film. Yeah.
So this is it. And so there's an element of luck, which is like, one thing was we did have great weather every single day. So it's consistent film set on one day. It's sunny every scene. Which, we were lucky, if it had been raining one day, we'd have been fucked.
Yeah.
And then there's the crew. We had this genuinely amazing crew. But also there is a thing I've now learned from doing lots of other stuff. You want people to believe in what they're doing. And I felt like, I know on day two, something happened on Super Bob. There was a scene with me and Catherine Tate and we were improvising. And something happened and you sort of felt like, oh, this is magic, and you could feel it in the room, you could feel it with the crew, you could feel their sort of shoulders shaking, so everything, and it was funny, and like everyone kind of leaning forward. I could see in my periphery everyone leaning forward, and from that day on it was like, oh, everyone is invested in this now, and everyone made more of an effort and pulled together. But I've been on shoots where, you know, the crew don't care, where they just want to clock off at 6,
just takes a bit, they take longer time doing things, they're not watching. Yeah. I've done stuff, you know, they're not watching what's going on,
but what's
really demoralising.
What I've heard is that the best shoots to work on, and this, I think it is more possible with something like a feature film where it's one project for a length of time rather than just sort of shift work or whatever, where the lead actor actually does become like the figurehead, and it is also their job to turn this into a team. You know, they are the one that everyone's looking at every single day. And so if that, then when they shout cut, that person remembers everyone's name and treats them like
a
family.
That's very important.
You know, when you hear them in interviews, like the most successful leading men and women, they treat it like that as well. They're not there to just, you know.
Yeah, rule number one, don't be a cunt.
Yeah.
It is though, because everyone's, particularly on low budget thing, like we had a thing, like, it was like communism. Our rule was like everyone was paid the same. Everyone. So all members of the crew, all actors, everyone was paid. I don't know if I can say it. I think it was everyone had 100 quid a day. So everyone's equal. There was no hierarchy of anything. And you all. So for some people, that's a pay rise. For a lot of people, it's a pay cut. But we're all treated the same. Everyone's as important as everyone else. And I think what's hard about filmmaking. Yeah, it's like building a city. There's so many people, and you kind of have to get everyone to feel the same way and view this thing the same way. And then once it's started, it's fucking going, and you can't really change direction. And so there's luck. And I think we're so lucky. There's bits of casting where, you know, and chemistry and stuff like that. Like, you know, we got Catherine Tate. You're not allowed to audition Catherine Tate. You offer it, and she says yes or no. So if Catherine Tate and I hadn't got on and it had been awkward, that'd be terrible. But it turned out was brilliant together, and it was wicked. But that's luck as much as anything, because you can't check that before you start. You know, you're sort of going, I hope this
and
works
out.
And
also the girl, you're brilliant as well. And the girl, what's the girl's name?
Nat Tenner. She's amazing.
Yeah, great.
Yeah,
amazing. The chemistry is great in the cast.
Lots of things like that you think are like, and that's why when you see bad films, you think it's just unlucky. You got bad chemistry you didn't know you would have, and you got too far in and you've not shot it right. And you know, Sam Mendes said of American Beauty, I think he shot 5 days and he had like a panic, and he called up Steven Spielberg and said, I'm so sorry, I think I'm doing this wrong, can I start again? And they gave him another $1 million or however much it would cost to start shooting again.
Wow.
But you don't have that luxury of leverage. You've just got to go for it.
And that's interesting you say about momentum as well. Once that ball's rolling, it's just like, like you can see how when you describe it like that, when you hear these stories of people like Lindsay Lohan or whoever not turning up one day, you're just like, how big a deal
that is. So big. Yeah, that's £1 million. Her big leg can be.
But is also everyone involved's entire attitude towards the project as well that has been sort of thrown in the toilet, right?
Yeah.
But even low budget, still the cost is huge for that amount of people.
So huge, yeah.
What was it like when you saw yourself, you were going to premiere, and you see yourself being such a thing, have you written it, something of your life gone into it, and you see it, the feeling, could you enjoy it, or was it just so stressful?
It was really, 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 really overwhelming. I think, like me and Joe said, it's like our wedding, because...
Is this his debut as well?
Yeah.
Right.
So... It's like an interesting thing to experience, because in a way what happened at that premiere was like a dream come true. It was like a dream.
The atmosphere was great.
The atmosphere was amazing. The audience really went for it. Like, we hadn't shown it to people, so we didn't know. And it'd been 4.5 years. Oh, we don't know if it's shit or not.
Yeah.
And as soon as they started laughing, something happens in the middle of the film. I won't say what it is, but I'll tell you when they... And I felt the whole audience kind of go... and I thought, oh, they're really into this. And... so it was kind of like the touch wood, it was sort of the nicest way it could have gone. It was so amazing. But it's so overwhelming, because the stress and the fear and the tension for years building up to showing it to people, that it's almost quite hard to experience it, because you're so, it's so mad, and you're, it's hard to be in it, you know what I mean? To be in the moment without going, bloody hell, what the fuck's going on? This is so weird.
It's a great moment, and you could tell the audience, the atmosphere, you could feel the atmosphere.
Yeah.
What was odd was being in, so I go and see films, you know, every week. I'm used to just being alone in the cinema.
Yeah.
So it was odd being in a packed cinema, and you feel, and that's when you feel what's great about cinema.
Yeah,
when you feel those sort of waves of emotion, and you feel all the, you can sort of sense the audience, all the nuances.
Yeah,
it's fascinating. Reacting to different moments. But I'm so used to watching by myself, and so that's what's great. When people are well behaved. I mean,
and that's why there's that thing of, it's really difficult, because we made this film, and it's very, very difficult to get... it's very difficult to get a film made, and then it's very difficult to get a film out. And then there's this fear, and I remember talking to John when we made the film, going, oh, he's like, I'm going to make this film really cinematic. And I was like, shouldn't we make it so it'll look good on an iPhone? Because that's probably where most people are going to watch it. And he said, no, let's go and make cinema. And then when you watch it with an audience in a beautiful cinema, you go, this is a cinema film. And it's scary and sad to think, oh, but most people are just going to watch it on their fucking laptop. And you think, but it works with your, you know, that feeling of an audience going with, because it's funny and romantic and also...
And it looks great, because I think how cameras have got cheaper and more accessible, so don't cost millions. So I think you shot an Alexa, did you, or something? The look of it and the colours, the colour palette's really nice as well, the way it looks quite bright and quite, it's all set in Peckham. And he's managed to get that colourfulness, which is, I thought was a really good part of it, a really nice, the way it looked really, really great. That's but and it's really refreshing to see lots of British comics and British people you won't have, or that we know that people won't have seen, who are great. Like people like Rachel Stubbings doing part, Mark Restuccia, is it? Little people doing
cameos.
Yeah, Zoe Lyons. You see Joe these Wilson. People. Yeah, you see all these people and go and think, oh, I'm really pleased.
Well, you know
to
what?
See them in a film.
It's because of, I was really strict on this, because like, when you watch, you don't see enough of that, I don't think. When you watch American Werewolf in London, which is one of my favourite films.
Yeah, amazing, yeah.
Every single part in that film is funny. All the little parts, all the policeman roles, the kid in the zoo, like all the minor parts are funny and they're really like well drawn characters and funny. It's like I wanted that. So every part in Super Bowl, that's the bit I'm maybe most proud of, is that all the little parts are fucking funny and great and they have a total character. And
yeah,
just given we know all these funny people, yeah, they're all being wasted,
they're not being used at all. And, yeah, you see, yeah, and you see them on the big screen, people who are struggling to get. I went to round Rachel Stubbings and did one of her Stubbing Out Problems right. thing, and we're saying, oh, we can't get any work. And you sit, and then the next day,
yeah,
you see him on the big screen, you think, you look she's great on that big screen, and you think you're trying, you, and the same, you don't see any of these people breaking through.
Yeah.
But I feel really strongly about that. I think it's really important that where the I think the British, we watch all these films, and there's hardly any British films, or it's the same old faces, the same old people, and the British public aren't aware of this groundswell of comedians that never get any break. So please go and support Super Bob when it comes out.
Thanks.
And we'll give you some. And what, have you got a website?
We'll give you some money.
Is it part of the wider Marvel universe? Do you think they will buy you up and
well, the
you'll be there in Guardians of the Galaxy 3?
We thought about it. We thought it'd be really funny. I actually had an idea if we could ever get them to watch it, that we could do like a comic relief sketch or something where Super Bob joins the Avengers for a day. As a sort of cultural exchange or something.
You could probably get Jeremy Renner or something.
Yeah.
So what are you going to do next then? Because I think it's going to be big for you, Brett. You're going to go to the States and do stuff or acting or make some more films?
We'd like to make... I've got another idea that I'd like to do with John, say, the next 12 years. We'll try and get it done in under 5 years.
We've had some good ideas in the past, haven't we? Like The Bumming Man.
Yeah, The Bumming Man. Marek's really keen on Bumming Man.
I can't remember what other film ideas you've had.
Is it The Running Man with Bummy?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah,
pretty much. Yeah.
That's a great idea.
Yeah. Blue Zombie.
Oh, yeah, all the police Blue Zombie. Zombies.
Marek decided that all films that have Blue in the title are great.
Yeah,
and
true.
All zombie films make money. So, Blue Zombie, it's natural movie maths. Where,
that's great thinking.
Where,
you think like a Hollywood exec.
Yeah.
Blue Zombie is all the police in the whole world become zombies. So the only people who can defeat the police, criminals. So they have to let them all out of prison to defeat the
that's
zombies.
That's a really good
Blue
idea.
Blue Zombie.
So if anyone's listening and wants to fund
Blue Zombie. Steal that and then pretend they had it 5 years before. Oh, have you got a Facebook page for people so they can get, or anything like that, or... We'll just let people know.
There's a teaser on Vimeo.
What's your Twitter thingy so people can follow you on that?
That's Brett Goldstein, I think.
Cool. Well, we will talk about Super Bob when it's in the cinemas. Fingers crossed for April.
Yeah, thanks so much for coming in. I think it's really
Thank
brilliant
you for
what you've done.
I really appreciate it. Any, you know, I appreciate your support of it. Thank you very much.
Well, hopefully people listening will go and watch it when it comes out, and then. But well done.
Thanks.
Because it's such a hard thing.
Thanks.
I've been really gushing my praise, but I feel really strongly about it. I feel really strongly that you should support British. Oh, because I normally hate superhero films so much, and
really
no Hollywood films. So,
yeah, it's Marek's thing that when I say, so I've been to see X-Man, you say, oh no, what you see that rubbish
or
for?
Or a Nicolas Cage film.
Oh! Yeah, which is basically all I go to
Have
see.
Have you seen Dying of the Light?
Not yet, actually, that's the next one. I saw Joe
Even
this week. I was
it.
Catching up on Joe.
Thank
is there anything else you want to plug, or Twitter handles enough?
Don't worry about it.
Fine, cool.
Yeah, just Super Bob.
But let us know when it comes out. We'll put it on our Facebook page, which you can find on...
Oh, yes, facebook.com/filmfandango. If you'd like to write to us, and we'll read out emails in the coming weeks, then please do so, dearfilmfandango@gmail.com, or you can talk to us all on Twitter, at Mr. David Reed, at Marek Larwood, at Brett Goldstein, at Film Fandango. That's all of them, I think. Hello, buddy. And also, we do all of this for free. So if you'd like to contribute
what?
To our... Yeah.
Yeah, we should believe it.
Or our exorbitant fees that our guests charge, then you can do so by going to filmfandango.co.uk and following the links from there. And thank you to everyone who has. We'll be back next week. Keep watching the films. Goodbye.
Bye.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus,
Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.